This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. Exciting week. Yes, that's right. Week ahead. We've got two episodes for you today. College football handicapper Paul Stone will give us some of his best bets. We'll go through his power ratings. We'll dive into a bunch of thoughts regarding the Heisman, regarding a couple game of the year lines, his process, all of that. So Paul Stone's going to join us here in just a little bit. And then later this week, we will be joined by former Ohio State linebacker, also SiriusXM college radio host, Bobby Carpenter. We will dive into the Ohio State Buckeyes and get his thoughts on his favorite quarterback in college football. So we will have two episodes for you this week. Just a reminder, continue to give us a five-star rating wherever you are listening, whether it be iTunes, Spotify, whatever podcast forum, or if you're on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. We will be with you every week, maybe multiple episodes a week here on the podcast feed. So we're getting closer, 15 weeks away from the start of the college football season. We're getting little morsels of game times and, you know, different pieces of just things of excitement that can get us rolling. Some primetime games announced. We'll dive into those here in just a moment. But we're going to chat with Paul, as I mentioned, and he's got a couple of plays on LSU. And boy, oh boy, the beauty of our podcast is we don't really have to dive into kind of the shenanigans that is going on in college football. But Lane Kiffin's latest is something. His Vanity Fair feature where he's talking about players that he was trying to recruit to Mississippi, wouldn't let them come. Quote, "Hey, coach, we really like you, but my grandparents aren't letting me move to Oxford, Mississippi." That doesn't come up when you say Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Parents were sitting here this weekend saying the campus's diversity feels so great. Quote, "It feels like there's no segregation, and we want that for our kid because that's the real world." Now, Lane Kiffin has since, in air quotes, apologized and pulled the old, "Well, if that offends you, I'm sorry." So as a better, and as we look at it one way, September 19th, no game of the year line out yet, but September 19th, I think, is going to be the best atmosphere this year in college football, at least in the regular season. In Oxford, the return of LSU, the return of Lane with LSU, it was already going to be amped up based off of his exit last year, leaving his team in the dark in the playoff. They make the magical run to the semifinals. But now you add this to it and his quote, "I really apologize if anyone at Ole Miss or in Mississippi was offended by that." It's the old Ricky Bobby, "But I said with all due respect." In a four-hour interview, I was asked a lot of questions on a lot of things, and Ole Miss has been wonderful to me and my family. I was asked questions about differences in recruiting, and I said a narrative that we battled there from some out-of-state black parents and grandparents was not wanting their kid to move to Mississippi. That's a narrative that coaches have been fighting forever. It wasn't calculated by bringing it up. I'll just say this. If you want to hear a very passionate take on this, maybe not gambling-wise, go listen to Tim Brando talk about it. He was pretty fired up discussing Lane Kiffin's comments, but no line yet. Certainly, I imagine on this podcast, me and humans, I can almost guarantee you humans, will be on Ole Miss on September 19th, announced as a primetime game. No surprise there. By the way, your first three primetime games on ABC that were announced earlier this week, Clemson at LSU, double-digit dogs are the Clemson Tigers. Week two in Austin, Texas, Ohio State, College Game Day is already announced. They will be there. That shouldn't be a big shock. And then week three, Ole Miss, LSU, I can almost guarantee that'll be a College Game Day game as well. A couple other news and notes I wanted to pass across before we get to Paul Stone. Really scary situation and unfortunate situation that occurred over the weekend. Missouri running back Ahmad Hardy was shot in the upper leg at a outdoor concert at a bike club in Laurel, Mississippi. So he has been released from the hospital. This is what Eli Drinkwitz said regarding Ahmad Hardy, who ran for over 1,600 yards last year. Quote, "We'll take it day to day. He will be back healthy. You know, when you're dealing with elite athletes, right, getting back healthy and getting back to elite status is a little tricky in these situations. There's an opportunity he could be back this year. There's an opportunity he couldn't be back this year. We won't know those answers for a few weeks." So a really bad situation. Obviously, he has been discharged from the hospital. So from a life and death standpoint, it is looks like things are looking okay. But keep that in mind as you're thinking about Missouri. We don't know the status right now of Ahmad Hardy moving forward there. So certainly something to keep an eye on there for Mizzou heading into the season. And lastly, we're going to talk a little Heisman and a Heisman bet that was made by Paul Stone here in a little bit. But I wanted to read a tweet from our buddy, the Bear, Chris Felica. And we'll get the Bear on here at some point in the offseason. I think the Bear, in my opinion, is one of the best at breaking down the Heisman market. He's had some really good tickets over the years. I know he had a Travis Hunter ticket. I think he had Jeremiah Smith at a really, really long number, maybe his freshman year. And last week, I tweeted out the game of the year line between Miami and Notre Dame on November 7th. And he quote tweeted it and said, "As I've written in column and said on pod," his pod, of course, the Bear Bets podcast, we are friends of many college football podcasts, that being one of them, "winner here finishes regular season undefeated and will be number one seed in the CFP. Notre Dame wins, CJ Carr wins the Heisman. Miami wins, and we'll see if they have a standout or if multiple guys split the vote." So I think he would be alluding to, obviously, the quarterback in Darian Mensah, but also Malachi Toney. And is that a situation maybe brewing in Ohio State, too? We'll talk about that more with Bobby Carpenter next week or later this week, excuse me. But you got Julian Sand, Jeremiah Smith, Darian Mensah, Malachi Toney. Toney does everything, right? He'll throw, he'll get jet sweeps. He's a Swiss Army knife. And I kind of anticipate this year maybe for him to be involved even more. But then he mentioned CJ Carr. And you know, you look at the Notre Dame schedule right now, most challenging games at BYU, October 17th, November 7th at home against Miami. They'll be favored in both of those games. We'll talk about that a little bit more with Paul Stone. Around a double-digit favorite at BYU, looks like around a touchdown favorite against Miami. They get SMU on November 21st. But I tell you what, man, as I've stated it before, and I want to do a deep dive on the Heisman Trophy market in the coming weeks here, because you really can make a case for a lot of these quarterbacks. And do we go back to where we've been for a number of years, not 2 years ago with Travis Hunter, not 2020 with Devontae Smith, but 2 years ago, you got to recall, it was Hunter, Ashton, Jenny. There was no real standout quarterback. It's hard to envision there not being multiple standout quarterbacks this year. When you think about, I'm just going down the list, Carr, Manning, Sayan, Moore, Chambliss, Hoover, Mensah, Leavitt, Stockton, Reed, Maiava, Mateer, Bryce Underwood, Damon Williams. I mean, the list just goes on and on. And what are their numbers going to look like? Are there going to be opportunities for us as bettors to jump in season at some point? You know, I think back to a while back, a couple of years back, CJ Stroud, after I want to say they lost to maybe it was an early season loss for Ohio State, and Stroud went to 50-1. He became odds on favorite, didn't win it, but it gave you the opportunity to get off and get Bryce Young. Same situation happened with Bo Nix, around 30 to 50 to 1, whatever it was. And his odds, whether it was right or wrong, they were odds on going into the Pac-12 championship, and Jaden Daniels ends up winning the award. So I'm going to look at this market, and we took some long shots last year. Bet a Damon Williams, didn't come to fruition, obviously. Devin Dampier, but you go down the list, and there are some names with some big numbers. And I'll say a name that, you know, Bobby Carpenter is very high on, Lincoln Kienholz from Louisville. And I thought the quote that Bobby gave us when we recorded, and you'll hear it later this week, was he thinks Kienholz is maybe a top three athletic quarterback in the country this year. He's sitting there at 100 to 1 with a high profile game in week one on a Sunday night of Labor Day weekend against Ole Miss. So there's a lot of opportunities there, but yeah, good thought, no doubt, from the Bear. But CJ Carr, I beg your pardon, at plus 750, is he someone to get involved with right now? You know, I don't know if that necessarily is the case, but can't wait to do a deep dive on looking at this Heisman market, because it's going to be a incredible year. And I've said it, I'll continue to say it. You'll probably be mad at me continuing to say it. It's the year of the quarterback. Look up and down, man. I mean, every which way you look, there's great quarterbacks. I mean, Noah Fafita back for another year at Arizona. You know, Bo Prabula going to Virginia, CJ Bailey, a guy at NC State that we talked about with our guy Duck last week. There are so many good quarterbacks throughout college football that could really have a monster season. All right, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, Paul Stone will join us. We'll dive into some thoughts on LSU. We'll dive into some Heisman thoughts, his power ratings, best bets, a season win total best bet. So we'll do that when we come back. Paul Stone will join us. It is the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSIN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, one of our favorites, the one and only, the two-time Circa College Hoops champion, my arch enemy, because if it weren't for this next guest, I would be your two-time Circa College Hoops champion. But unfortunately, Paul keeps beating me and everyone else in the field. It is Paul Stone who joins us right now on the podcast from the great state of Texas. Mr. Stone, how has the offseason been treating you?
You know, it's been good. Took a little vacation in the middle of April, and now, you know, man, it's pretty much full steam ahead with college football. I go, you know, it's mid-May almost. I go to bed, Tim, thinking about college football. I get up thinking about college football. I'm kind of like that guy. If anybody's seen that meme where the guy and the girl are walking down the street and she's looking at him and says, he's probably thinking about other girls. And he's thinking, I wonder what a hypothetical line would be between, you know, State U and Slippery Rock or whatever. So I'm in total college football mode. It never gets any less fun, and it certainly never gets any less challenging. So looking forward to another year.
Well, you know, you've come to the right place. All our listeners, all our folks watching on YouTube are college football maniacs. And, you know, it's funny. I'm kind of that sicko. I'm wearing my Vegas Bowl hat right now. I'm like, when are they going to announce the dates for these bowl games? I want to know game times for week one. So I'm chomping at the bit, too. I'm glad we've been able to start the podcast a little bit earlier than we have in recent years. But, Paul, before we dive into some of your best bets, and Paul's got a couple of best bets he's going to dish out here on this visit, I am always curious, and we've had, you know, Brad Powers and Joshua Nunn, a couple other handicappers on so far this offseason. I'm always curious from a pros standpoint like yourself, what is the method to your madness of preparing for a college football season?
You know, I'll tell you, Tim, it's certainly changed in the last few years, and I don't think that's any great revelation. I mean, with the transfer portal and NIL and how, you know, college teams, they don't build programs anymore. They don't develop players much over 4 or 5 years. It's just you try to construct a roster from one season to the next. So, the volume of my work, and I'm sure your work and Brad and everybody else's, has just gone through the roof because you're trying to figure out, who's still there and who's gone, and, just put it all together and try to make the determinations of are they better at this position group, things like that. And we've got, I tell you, one of the most, just kind of a singular element that I think is really challenging is when you have a Power Five team take a transfer from, say, a group of four.
Mm-hmm.
And, that guy's, second team all conference, maybe offensive lineman. How is that going to, show itself in a Power Four conference when they step up in competition? And we see examples each and every season of some guys who make that jump. I mean, like Trinidad Chambliss. He's from Ferris State. They're Division II. They're not even FCS. There's FBS, FCS, Division II. And that guy, when he got his opportunity, 1 year later, he's one of the favorites for the Heisman Trophy. So you would have, never seen that coming. And some other guys, that have success at the lower levels, when they come up to the Power Four level, it doesn't translate. They don't make their mark. So it's just such a challenge, just trying to put the pieces together, determine what the roster looks like, and how that roster compares to the previous season.
Yeah, it's such a good point about Trinidad Chambliss. I mean, you hear the stories, Paul. I mean, he was about to take an official visit to Temple, maybe commit there, and the Ole Miss coaching staff, give credit to, Charlie Weiss Jr. and others, they watched tape and said, let's bring him in. He'll be our backup quarterback. And lo and behold, he takes the college football world by storm late in the season, and he's back, as you alluded to. We're going to get to Trinidad Chambliss and your thoughts on him in a futures market. And, you go one step further, and this is no knock on John Mateer, but I think maybe we got a little too excited about John Mateer a year ago, coming from Washington State. Had some ups, no doubt, but, the thumb injury obviously derailed a portion of his season of effectiveness. But speaking of the transfer portal, a guy that has embraced it from the jump is Lane Kiffin. He now goes to LSU, and they were busy. Number one portal class, according to some rankings out there. And before we get into LSU and what we expect to see from them for the full season, there is a game of the year that jumps out to you. And a couple of game of the year markets are starting to pop out. I mentioned it last week. Matt Grill from DraftKings mentioned he'll probably get about 50, 60 games out in a couple of weeks now. They've got a handful. But over at BetMGM, there's a game of the year line on Alabama LSU. This will be in Death Valley early November. I believe it's on that loaded November 7th day, which is just going to be incredible for college football. Right now, LSU laying 3.5 at home against Alabama in that game of the year. And you like the Bayou Bengals here.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, when you have LSU at home in Death Valley, a line of 3.5 pretty much infers that this game would be neutral, that would be pick 'em rather, at a neutral site. And I just don't think these teams are that close. I think LSU has a far superior roster. You talked about the damage that they did in the transfer portal. Obviously, Texas did a great job. Ole Miss did a great job. Miami, Texas Tech, and others bolstered their rosters as well. But I think LSU was the clear winner, in my opinion, in the transfer portal. I mean, the pieces they added, quality pieces, guys who performed at the highest level, starting with Sam Leavitt, the quarterback. He struggled last year with injuries at Arizona State with the Lisfranc injury, the foot injury. But the word is that they expect him to be 100% by the start of the season. And even if he's not 100%, in terms of this game, November 7th gives him some time, to get closer to that standard if he starts the season still a little bit hobbled. But this LSU team, I mean, talking about other pieces they added besides Leavitt, you add perhaps the best left tackle in all of college football in Jordan Seaton, who played his first two seasons there in Boulder for Deion Sanders. You add a defensive end, the guy from, I'm going blank here. Look at my notes here real quick.
You talk about Prince from Ole Miss?
Princewell, right. Yeah. I won't try to pronounce his last name. He's actually from Manor, Texas. He went to high school 20 miles from the UT, University of Tampa, Texas campus. So Princewell, just a big-time defensive end, had 9 sacks last year. I mean, he's a tremendous add. And they just bolstered their roster at many different positions. I think this is a championship-level football team, and I think they're going to take care of business there over the Crimson Tide. Alabama obviously had trouble running the football last year. I think the guy that they'll have at tailback this year, certainly by this game, if not much earlier, is true freshman Xavier Crowell, a big-time recruit out of the state of Alabama. He actually came out and reclassified to the 2026 class, so he's supposed to be about to enter his senior year in high school, but instead he'll be a freshman at the University of Alabama. And more than likely, they're starting tailback at some point very early in the season. You look at this guy physically, I think he's going to help them run the ball a little bit better. But even with that said, again, I think LSU is going to win this game by 6 points or more. And if you want me to transition to an additional pick that I have involving LSU, I'll go ahead and do that. You can find LSU to make the playoff also at BetMGM at plus 155 to make the playoff. And obviously in the SEC, regardless of who you are, you're going to have a tough schedule. LSU clearly has one of the toughest in the country, and that could be, a drawback to them making the playoff. They open with Clemson in Death Valley, the one in Baton Rouge. So they open with Clemson at home, which is not a gimme, although they're favored is LSU by about 10.5 in some of the game of the year markets. Additionally, they have home games against Texas A&M, Alabama, and Texas, and then they go on the road to play Ole Miss, Auburn, and Tennessee. So a very arduous schedule, to say the least, there for LSU. But I just think this is a football team. I'm going to have them rated, I understand, a little bit higher than the marketplace, but I think this LSU team's a clear top 10 team looking for big things this year out of the Bayou Bengals.
You know, Paul, I want to go back to the game of the year, and sometimes, obviously, we'll dish out as many bets as possible on the podcast, but I do like over the summer just to talk to folks like you and break it down, because I get this question a lot about betting game of the year lines early on, right? It's May 12th as we record this right now, Paul. So for you, you're betting into this market, right? You're laying the 3.5 now with the expectation that this number come game week, because remember, once the season starts, these lines all go down, and then you will have until, you know, that week to bet them. So how many game of the year lines do you tend to bet, and what leads you to a bet? How much edge do you feel like you need to have in order to bet a game of the year line?
Yeah, I mean, it varies, but that's a great point, and I should have made that probably from the get-go. If you're laying 3.5 today in mid-May on a game of the year, and you anticipate that the line's going to be 3.5 the week of the game, you're not going to tie your money up for 5 or 6 months. That doesn't make any sense. So you have to be of the belief that your power rating it essentially is different than the marketplace on that team or their opponent or both. And you have to anticipate and guess that the line is going to be greater in this case than 3.5 when LSU and Alabama meet the week of the game. So, you know, that's the key point. You've got to be believing that you're getting value when you bet in mid-May. That is paramount. And as far as the number of games that I bet now, it really varies. I don't bet as many games the year as I used to. It's a little bit more difficult to get down. That's one of the issues, unfortunately. And then I just, you know, you're a little more careful because, again, the roster turnover on these teams is so significant that it, you know, it adds a little bit more guesswork to it. And as far as the difference, you know, like in a game where it's 3.5, I think the kind of the tipping point there would be, I've got to feel like they're probably going to be favored by 6 or more. And that's kind of what I feel like here. You know, I think the true line in this game is probably about 6 right now. I think LSU, again, is a better team than Alabama on paper. So that's kind of what I'm anticipating that line might open at in on November 7th, come the week of the game.
By the way, I mentioned it. November 7th, here you go, is Alabama at LSU, Oregon at Ohio State, Miami at Notre Dame, Georgia at Ole Miss, the Holy War, BYU at Utah, Oklahoma at Florida, Penn State at Washington. How about Virginia Tech at SMU and Texas, Missouri? So quite the day. And if anyone sends you a wedding invitation, just decline it right now because you should not go to a wedding on that day. You should never go to a wedding in the fall regardless. But yeah, that is going to be an absolutely monstrous day. And Ole Miss will be at home against Georgia. And we'll get into your power ratings here in just a little bit. We had Brad Powers on a couple weeks ago, as I alluded to, and he has Georgia as his best team in the SEC. So maybe a Heisman opportunity on November 7th for Trinidad Chambliss. As we look at the market right now, Paul, BetMGM has Trinidad Chambliss at 9-1. But if you look around, and that's what you should be doing this time of year, here in Vegas at the Westgate Superbook, the quarterback of Ole Miss is at 14-1 to win the Heisman Trophy. And that's a bet that you placed.
I mean, Trinidad Chambliss, you look at that victory in the quarterfinals, 39-34 over Georgia. I don't know, Tim, that there was a better single game performance by a quarterback or maybe any other position player than what Chambliss did against Georgia on that evening in the quarterfinals. I mean, 30 of 46, 362 yards, two touchdowns, just a magnificent performance. He was under constant pressure against a very good Georgia defense, and he was just a magician back there. You look at the final six games of last year, and that starts with Citadel, and I understand that's an FCS opponent that's not a real strong opponent, but it also, that six-game set includes playoff games against Tulane, Georgia, and Miami. So some pretty good teams there. So pretty representative of their overall schedule. In those final six games last year, Trinidad Chambliss completed 154 of 214 passes. So 72% of his throws, not for a low yards per attempt, but almost 9 yards an attempt over those six games, 8.9, 914 yards, 12 touchdowns against one interception in those last six games. So he was on fire down the stretch. He does lose Stribling and Harrison Wallace, his top two receivers. So they got to have some guys come in, and they're going to be counting on a five-star that didn't play much for them last year as a true freshman, Caleb Cunningham, to take the next step. Also brought in Jontae Cook, who originally signed with the University of Texas out of high school, played at Syracuse last year, had a pretty solid year for the Orange there. And also another thing that bolsters Chambliss's chances, in my opinion, is the fact that he's got that running back, maybe the best running back in college football, and Kewon Lacy, guy who had almost 1,600 yards rushing last year. So Chambliss is just a playmaker. Again, you can find him at 14-1. And it's not so much, I mean, I do think he's got a chance to win the Heisman Trophy, but you've got to figure in the number. A lot of people don't mesh the two as well as they should. If I was just picking one guy to win it, and I might even kind of split my unit here a little bit, and I know this is a polarizing name to be talking about, especially in mid-May, but if I was just going to pick one guy to win it, I'd pick Arch Manning. Mm-hmm. I think Arch Manning's probably ultimately going to win it. You can find him as favorable as plus 800 or 8-1 there at Circa, plus 700 and plus 750, pretty much market wide at other stores. But Manning, I mean, he struggled out of the gate his first year as a starter last year. Looked like a newbie. Looked like he didn't know where he was at times. Didn't play all that great. But here's a trivia question. Ooh. And you probably know the answer based on the fact that I'm asking this question when talking about Arch Manning. But what quarterback in all of college football had the best QBR, the best quarterback rating, last year from October on? So from October the 1st to the end of the season.
Are you leading the witness, Paul?
Who had the best QBR in college football?
Arch Manning.
Archibald Charles Manning had the best QBR. And that guy, I mean, if you watch the Michigan game, if you watch the A&M game, if you watch the last few and watch them closely, he started running the football more. And this guy, and I said it all along, this guy, when he gets in the open field, it's over. Nobody's catching him. And he looks like a gawky, kind of uncoordinated white guy that maybe can't outrun people. But, man, he's got great top-end speed. He's big. He's physical. Kind of a little bit cocky. So I think Manning's going to have a big-time year. And one thing that I think is going to help him in the Heisman race and in lifting Texas's fortunes is a wide receiver group that's the best in the country, in my opinion. Cam Coleman, wide receiver one, Ryan Wingo, wide receiver two, and a guy that a lot of people are sleeping on, but really the wild card that makes the matchup problems just nightmarish for defensive coordinators, is wide receiver three, Emmett Mosley the fifth. This is a guy who transferred from Stanford after the 2024 season. He was injured much of last year during 2025. Didn't ever really get his footing for the Longhorns. But if you look at him for Stanford, the last maybe five games of that 2024 season, man, he started rolling. And there was a game in particular against Louisville. They beat the Cardinals, Stanford, upset them 38-35. In that game, true freshman Mosley, 13 catches, 168 yards, three touchdowns. Pretty good Louisville defense. He's going to be a problem. Texas is going to, I think they're going to score a lot of points. So I'd kind of recommend maybe shave off a little bit of your unit and play it on one of the favorites, Manning, at 8-1. But I think Chambliss at 14-1 is an excellent buy as well. And he's just a playmaker. So, my thoughts there on the Heisman race.
Yeah, I'm going to do a deep dive later this summer, no doubt, on the Heisman market because, man, I said it in our first podcast this offseason, Paul, which is it's the year of the quarterback in college football. I mean, it is, you've heard a lot about the 27 draft class, but even guys who may not be high draft picks are going to be phenomenal quarterbacks in college football, whether you look at a Jaden Maiava at USC, but you go up and down this list, CJ Carr, Arch Manning, Julian Sayin, Dante Moore, Trinidad Chambliss, Josh Hoover, Mensah, Gunnar Stockton, Marcel Reed. I mean, heck, you even go further down, the Heisman board, you're looking at a guy that I love and loved last year in Devin Dampier. Avery Johnson's back for another year. DJ Lagway goes to Baylor. I mean, the list, Kevin Jennings is still at SMU. I mean, it's really going to be a who's who of college football quarterback play this year. You look about, some of the guys who have jumped up from the group of five ranks to the P4 ranks, like a Byron Brown going to Auburn. So it's going to be a really fun year of quarterback play, and it makes it fascinating. And, Paul, you're going to hear lots of people. You gave a great pitch on Trinidad Chambliss. Hard to disagree with some of that. I'm going to hear great pitches on lots of quarterbacks, to win the Heisman Trophy and take some long shot bets on. It's going to be a really exciting year. I want to jump into, we're going to hit a best bet for you in the American in just a moment, but you talk so much about Texas. So I wanted to dive in a little bit on the Texas Longhorns because, they missed out on the playoff. They felt like they were snubbed. That's a discussion for a different time. But you alluded to what they did in the portal, bringing in a guy like Cam Coleman, who is absolutely studly to add into that wide receiver room. And you're spot on about Emmett Mosley. As a Notre Dame fan, his dad went to Notre Dame, so I'm a bit chapped that he is not in South Bend. He's down in Austin after he transferred from Stanford. But, where do you have this Texas team in your power ratings right now? And is this a team that you're looking at to win the national title this year?
Well, I have them fifth, and my teams in my top 10, are really condensed. They're really close together. Obviously, these are very fluid, even between now and the start of the season. I mean, we'll get injury and other information that will cause us to adjust our power ratings. And we'll also do, as you indicated, deeper dives, and we'll uncover different nuggets and just kind of shift our opinions ever so slightly. But I've got Texas number five in my power ratings. I've got Ohio State and Oregon number one. Tied for number one, Georgia three, and Notre Dame four ahead of Texas. But I think this Texas team clearly is one of about seven or eight teams that could win the national championship, adding Cam Coleman, supposedly, reportedly at $2.5 million for the 2026 season was a big investment, and they're expecting big things out of Cam Coleman. And I think, again, just with that, with Manning being in his second year, you would expect him to make a major jump from year one to year two. And now he has more weapons at his disposal, has the three receivers that I've already talked about. They went to the portal, also got a couple of running backs, Hollywood Smothers out of North Carolina State. Also added Raylique Brown out of Arizona State. And those two guys, kind of smaller, kind of shifty guys, might not solve Texas's main problem the last you know, few years, which has been short yardage run game. You know, third and one and fourth and one against the big boys like Georgia and Kirby Smart, hadn't been able to get those tough inside yards. And much like I indicated, some people might be sleeping on Emmett Mosley the fifth at wide receiver, a name to watch for Texas in that running back room, true freshman Derek Cooper out of the state of Florida. Texas has recruited the state of Florida, especially at the running back position, very hard the last several years. And Cooper's a guy who's just, again, he's got that big physical appearance. He's got the big thighs, the big backside, looks like a running back. You know, it all depends on how he handles pass protection, understands and learns the playbook and things like that as far as how much playing time he'll get early, especially with two veterans like Smothers and Brown being on hand. But I think Derek Cooper, a name to remember and a guy who's going to make an impact for the Longhorns. But again, talking about or touching on the Longhorns offensive line, I think they improved it. They went into the portal, got several guys, most notably Melvin Ciani of Wake Forest, played, I think, about 850 snaps last year, didn't give up a snap. He was a highly coveted offensive lineman in the portal. I think he'll help the Longhorns. I think they'll be better there. But it'll, you know, one of these years, Sarkisian's probably going to, you know, he's been knocking on the door the last few years. One of these years, he'll knock it down. And it could be this year. Some things have to happen, obviously, for that to occur. But Texas is certainly one of the main players, in my opinion, for the 2026 national title.
Yeah, week two, it's going to get, it's going to be quite the game. Week two in Austin against Ohio State. You know, personally, I like that we get in week two as opposed to week one. You know, a lot of unknowns last year. It was a kind of a clunky game in week number one. Ohio State's defense shined a bit there, but that will be one of the games of the year. There's no doubt. Ohio State, Texas, week two of the college football season. Staying in the state of Texas, and for those who are unaware, Paul lives in Texas, so I always love to poke his pick his brain, I guess, would be a better way to look at it, on teams in Texas. And Texas Tech, what they did last year, the money they've invested in their program, but then the situation with Brendan Sorsby, it's kind of murky about these Red Raiders. So your power ratings, you do have Texas Tech still in your top 10. Where are they from a separation standpoint to the rest of the Big 12, with the anticipation, unless you're thinking differently, that we will not see Brendan Sorsby this year?
Yeah, my expectation in that, that's kind of, you know, that's obviously a huge factor in how we handicap Texas Tech going forward once we get a determination on whether Brendan Sorsby will be out in Lubbock with the Red Raiders or not. But I'm like you at this point, you have to anticipate that he will not be. Kind of a bit of a side note, and you've probably seen the same stories that I have. He's hired an attorney, and if this goes to an appeal type situation, it would be filed in a state district court in Lubbock, Texas, being heard by a judge who is an elected official. So, man, you know, this is college football's a mess. I mean, got a Mississippi judge ruling on Trinidad Chambliss, is not saying he shouldn't have gotten the extra year, but when you have a Mississippi state judge ruling on his eligibility, you hypothetically and potentially have a judge in Lubbock, Texas ruling on the eligibility of Brendan Sorsby. Man, that's some messed up stuff, but I don't know how you get around it. But I'm handicapping from the perspective that their starting quarterback on day one is going to be Will Hammond. He's a guy who started two games last year in relief of Bayron Morton when Morton was injured. Also started the 2024 bowl game against Arkansas, if you recall. He's a guy that they're extremely high on. I don't know. You know, there's going to be some drop-off from Sorsby to Hammond if that's the case. Hammond initially was not expected to be available until maybe the end of September, but now the reports are more favorable. Many people are saying, apparently inside the program, that he could be ready by opening day. So the drop-off from Sorsby to Hammond, I think, is about 2 or 3 points. And it would be greater, but the fact that Texas Tech has such a great supporting cast, from my perspective anyway, kind of narrows the gap there. But this is a Texas Tech team that I think is going to be favored by double digits in all their games. I currently have them minus 10 at Oklahoma State as their most tightly lined game. That game going to be played on November 14th. And then also the only other line that I have projected right now, two touchdowns or lower, is minus 14 in Lubbock against Houston on September 19th. I think this Houston team is probably the third best team in the Big 12. I think Texas Tech's main challenge will be from BYU, but they don't play the Cougars this year. But Texas Tech has a very manageable schedule. They will be favored without question in all 12 games, outside of Sorsby not being eligible or Hammond getting injured. They will be favored by in all 12 games and probably by double digits in all 12.
You know, Paul, with that being said, you look at the Big 12 conference future market, and as crazy as it sounds, it does feel like maybe there's a little bit of a buy low opportunity on Texas Tech with the news out there about Sorsby. You look around the betting market, you're not getting crazy numbers, but FanDuel's plus 110, DraftKings is even money on Texas Tech to win this conference. Would you look into a conference play for Texas Tech, knowing that, based off of your power ratings, even if they were to face a Utah or a BYU in the championship game, they would be a favorite on a neutral, and you'd be able to maybe try to middle that position. Does a Texas Tech to win the Big 12 future have any interest for you?
I mean, you laid it out beautifully, Tim. I think it's highly unlikely Texas Tech's not going to be in the Big 12 championship game, and I certainly think they're going to be the favorite regardless of who the quarterback is. So if you can get plus 110 to win the conference, to win that title game, essentially, that's value, and that's what we look for as sports bettors. So I certainly can't fault a person for taking that position. And much like we talked about on the games of the year, you know, if you don't think you're getting a better number now than you'll be able to get later, closer to the point of occurrence of the event, then you shouldn't take it. You're not getting Texas Tech at any better than plus 110, in my opinion, from this point going forward, better than plus 110 to win the conference. I think they'll go to minus money at some point, probably before the season kicks off, especially if the news was turned out to be optimistic on Sorsby. Obviously, it's going to be, much greater, above one, you know, north of 150, maybe closer to $2, maybe even above $2. I don't know what it was before he was injured, but if Hammond, if he starts the opener and he looks healthy and all that, I think it's certainly going to minus money in that case as well. So you're not getting plus money forever on the Red Raiders to win the league.
So you and I both were quoted in an article in the Chicago Sun-Times this past week, our buddy Rob Meesh breaking it down, and with a little bit of a local flavor, covering Notre Dame. And you look at Texas Tech's schedule, it is very favorable. Notre Dame, I would say, is favorable, not as favorable as Texas Tech, but for Notre Dame, you have them fourth in your power ratings. What are their, based off of your power numbers right now, what are their most challenging games and what do those lines look like? Because the two that jump out would be October 17th in Provo against BYU, and then back to that glorious November 7th day when they host Miami in prime time under the lights in South Bend.
Well, Notre Dame, I mean, obviously the Irish have a very favorable schedule. In 10 of their 12 games, outside of an injury to C.J. Carr, in 10 of their 12, they're going to be favored by double digits. And in many of those 10, they're going to be favored by more, three touchdowns or more. So they're going to be considerable favorites in a large percentage of their games. You mentioned the two that are going to be, in my opinion, at this point anyway, where they won't be double-digit favorites. At BYU on the 17th of October, I made them minus 7 against BYU in that game. And then on November 7th at home against Miami, Florida, I've made the Irish minus 6. And we kind of joked off air. I think you maybe thought my BYU number was a little bit low at minus 7. But, you know, I looked at some of the, and I'm not saying they're the end all or the be all because they're not booking games. But I looked at one rider has BYU number 10 in their preseason way too early poll, which I think is too high. ESPN had them at number 12 and Fox had them at 17. I mean, I think this is a good BYU team. You got Bear Bachmeyer back at quarterback. You've got L.J. Martin, one of the top running backs in all of college football, the Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year last year. Kalani Sitake is an underrated head coach, very defensive-minded head coach. Cougars always going to play great defense, and the Irish having to go to Provo. But other than those two games, the Irish going to be favored by double digits, I think, in 10 of their 12. And with that defense that they've got, returning 9 of their top 10 tacklers, and again, C.J. Carr back for his second year, much like Arch Manning and some of the other quarterbacks, he's going to be a better quarterback in 2026 than he was in 2025, and he was awfully good at the end of last season. So the Irish, clearly a team not to be taken lightly, and wouldn't surprise me one bit if they're in that championship game when we get down to the final two in early part of 2027.
Well, you know, that wouldn't upset me, especially with with the game being in Las Vegas, too. So that would all that would all come together beautifully. If I could just make a pitch to the television people out there, I know they're, you know, big listeners to the podcast. Can we not do something idiotic like put Notre Dame BYU and Big Noon or something like that? That needs to be a night game in Provo. Great atmosphere, and I'm looking forward. I've never been to Lavelle Edwards Stadium with people. I've walked through the stadium. It is as beautiful as a setting as there is in college football, and if you get those two programs going head-to-head, and I know BYU fans are still a little bit chapped by the Pop-Tarts Bowl not happening. That was the expectation of that was going to be the bowl game, and Notre Dame opted out of a bowl this year, so that should be a really good atmosphere, and fingers crossed, I'm hoping to be there. And I think that's going to be quite a game between the Irish and the Cougars. You mentioned Oklahoma State in passing, that would be the shortest spread versus Texas Tech at home. And there's a big reason why, because they're basically the Oklahoma State mean green this year, right? They bring in Eric Morris. They bring in Drew Mestemaker. A lot of those pieces for that prolific offense for North Texas are now in Stillwater. So there's some excitement there. And Oklahoma State week two plays Oregon, which I think could be a lot of fun potentially. I know Oregon, you have them co-number one right now with Ohio State in your power ratings. But with North Texas losing all those players, it does pose a quite a unique situation. So per Bill Conley, North Texas, 132nd in the country, Paul, in returning production. Win total right now at DraftKings is 6.5, juiced under at minus $1.80. Oh, by the way, North Texas opens up the season on the road at Bloomington against the defending national champions. What are you expecting from North Texas? And is this a win total that you have bet?
It is. I mean, you look at this North Texas team, and when Eric Morris took the job to the Northeast there in Stillwater, you know, he took 17 players with him, I believe, from North Texas's roster, and he just didn't take any 17. You know, he took the best and the brightest. I mean, you talked about Drew Mestemaker, the quarterback. Caleb Hawkins had a remarkable true freshman season as a running back there in Denton. Wyatt Young, the best wide receiver for North Texas. Just, again, their very best players from a very prolific offensive unit. And then defensively, there's 7 players from North Texas going to Oklahoma State. 6 of those guys are projected to be starters at Oklahoma State. So they just ravaged the Mean Green's roster. They lost, you know, 37 players through the portal. They have 49 coming in, but I don't think the 49 coming in are collectively anywhere near the talent level of the 37 that they lost. Former Troy and West Virginia head coach Neil Brown, he's going to need time. You know, he's kind of starting over there in Denton this year. Might have a pretty good quarterback, Taven Jackson, who played last year at Central Florida, started 10 games there, had previous stints at Indiana and Tennessee. But this is just a North Texas team that, you know, I think lost a lot of personnel. And, of course, if you're talking about handicapping a regular season win total, if you don't look at the schedule, you're really missing a huge component of that handicap. And you talked about opening at Indiana. In week three, they're going to Texas State. In between, at home, they're playing UNLV. They're going to be underdogs in all three of those games. And if they start out 0-3 in their remaining 9 games, they'll have to go 7-2 to get to the over. And I think they're starting out 0-3, and I don't think they're going 7-2 in the final nine. I mean, you look at their road games in the American Conference, just solely the road games, at Tulsa, at Navy, at Texas San Antonio, which lost some people, but does have Owen McAllen coming back at quarterback, and then at Tulane. So, you know, I think they're losing probably at least three of those four games. And if they lose their first three and then lose three of those four, the best they could do was 6-6. And I think personally, I think 6-6, I might nominate Neil Brown for American Conference Coach of the Year if he does that with what he's got on hand right now, because he was left with a pretty empty cupboard. And I think North Texas is going to be lucky to go 6-6. And I think more than likely the Mean Green will have a losing record in 2026.
Now, you look at scheduling quirks, and I like to look at it, too. And, you know, for me, going on the road to Navy and then following that up with a short week taking on Florida Atlantic, you talk about two polar opposites of styles of play, right? Navy's the triple option. They're going to grind you. And then Florida Atlantic, they want to spread you out and go up and down the full field. So really tricky spot there in the schedule for North Texas, as you pointed out. So, yeah, hard to disagree with that. And, you know, we'll talk more about this as the summer goes on. But DraftKings did drop their American Conference winner odds. That conference feels to me wide open. I think there could be a boatload of teams that win it. You know, for me, Navy probably shouldn't be the favorite at plus 360, knowing that they lose Blake Horvath, two pros, Heidenreich and Robinson. So they lost a lot of production there in Annapolis. But, you know, they'll be well coached. They've got a unique scheme. Drew Cronick's back as their offensive coordinator. So I do expect them still to be solid, but I don't know if they should be the betting favorite. But the American seems wide open to me. Paul, this was awesome. I can only imagine we'll do it again this summer when we both are got a couple more bets in our back pocket. But, you know, for folks looking to get info from you throughout the summer months, where can they find you?
Well, I'm active on Twitter at Paul Stone Sports. Also have a website, paulstonesports.org, and they can contact me through email as well, paulstonesports@gmail.com. I always, as quickly as I can, respond to emails and try to love to talk college football with folks and try to answer any inquiries as timely as possible.
Paul, you're the best. Always appreciate it, and we will definitely talk to you soon.
Good deal. Appreciate you having me, Tim. Have a great summer.
There he is. Paul Stone. We'll take a quick break. It is the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.
This is VSIN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Thanks to Paul Stone. Great stuff as always. Please follow Paul on Twitter at Paul Stone Sports. I'm at One Tim Murray if you want to give me a follow as well. And just a reminder, please continue to rate, review, and subscribe. Every episode is up on YouTube, youtube.com/collegefootballbettingpodcast. And we have an email, cfbpod@vsin.com. If you do want to give us some suggestions on guests you'd like to hear from or, just any feedback, questions we want us to address here on the podcast, feel free to shoot us a note as we are up and running throughout the offseason here. We do have a special episode for you later this week. Bobby Carpenter, Ohio State, former Ohio State linebacker, he will join the show. So that was a fun conversation. Thanks to producers of this podcast, Wyatt Tomchek and Ryan Hunter. I'm Tim Murray. Once again, another episode later this week with Bobby Carpenter. This is the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.